Come here and leave me alone. A bit of an ambiguous signal. It doesn't exactly meet the standards of clear communication. But to be honest, in real life, it happens pretty frequently. We receive a lot of mixed messages because we people have mixed, even paradoxical feelings. The most obvious example that come to mind are close relationships that are fraught with conflict. It was great seeing a lot of kids here today, but kids turn into teenagers. I have one is just finished with that time. And if we think about how they relate with their parents frequently, mixed messages. On the one hand, they want their parents' engagement still, and on the other hand, they want distance and freedom. And spouses, too, if you think about conflict in the family, sometimes their hearts can tear in two directions at once. A longing for a greater intimacy, and at the same time, a need for a safe space. Even when these two desires are incompatible, it doesn't mean that one necessarily cancels the other one out. Both of these contradictory feelings can be in us at the same time. Maybe you're feeling a bit of ambiguity already, given the fact that we came in and the first word we said together was rejoice, and then we hear readings from Job and the end of Matthew. Not the kind of rejoicing sort of text that we, you might say. Today is a time to think about ambiguity. The poet W.H. Auden said that great art is clear thinking about mixed feelings. And by that standard, the book of Job is great art. It's a book that cannot help but provoke mixed feelings in its readers. And its titular hero, too, is one that has a lot of mixed feelings in his agitated state of anguish. He is constantly sending God the message, come here and leave me alone. Job is not in a safe space, not at all. He has lost his children, his health, and his wealth. Neither his wife nor his friends are helpful to him. He feels alone and misunderstood. He demands, actually, that God listen to his complaint. Job wants a sort of court hearing with God. Job feels that he is being accused, judged by God from a distance, and Job wants to defend his honor. Come over here, God, sounds out again and again in Job's complaint. He demands satisfaction, even as he imagines terrible consequences of this court case. Just before our reading today, Job says of God, he says this of God, see, he will kill me. I have no hope, but I will defend my ways to his face. But while Job, from one side of his mouth, is calling God closer, from the other side of his mouth, he is saying, leave me alone. Job recognizes the vast difference between himself and God and feels like God is picking on him. In our passage today, Job uses a variety of metaphors that all point in the same direction. We humans are mortal. We fade like a flower. We are quite insignificant in the grand scheme of things. Therefore, we cannot withstand the unblinking eye of absolute justice. Job says it would only be fair if God should turn away rather than to judge. Earlier in the book, Job says, "Will you not look away from me for a while? Let me alone until I swallow my spittle. Why have you made me your target?" We see here that in Job we have no patient, quiet, long-suffering victim, as he is often described. Rather, in his dialogues, responses to friends and complaints, we see a man who rises up in righteous indignation and vehement protest. He gives a very clear assessment of human frailty, and at the same time strongly and sincerely demands that God give him a hearing. While at the same time, he expresses his doubts about whether God actually cares about humans. In our chapter later, it says, Job says, "You destroy the hopes of mortals." The example of Job is extreme, and that's just what the author intended. But still, it reflects a common human experience. When we consider the thrust of Job's argument, it's hard to say that where he gets it wrong, at least in terms of his appraisal of the state of humanity. He thinks and says out loud things that are familiar to us when the going gets rough. There is much in his laments and protests that resonate with our own disillusionment and discouragement over issues that plague the world, the church, and our own personal lives. Today, this happens in November kind of naturally. As the natural world changes and the days get shorter, it seems we also have a lot of memorial days thinking about the frailty of human experience. As Jill mentioned in the announcements and in the prayer, the National Day of Mourning that we have today, Veterans Day in the U.S., or Armistice Day in the U.K. And nature is kind of telling us things come to an end. Today we read about the fading flower, the shadow that is long, gets short, gets long again, and then disappears. A river drying up, a seemingly dead tree. Yeah, human life is very fragile. And in particular, the images, the natural images from the reading today reminded me of my trip to Malawi during the country's dry season earlier this year. There, the population, especially in rural areas, suffer from a complex set of environmental and economic issues that include a lack of access to electrical power, clean water, and sufficient supplies of food. And my colleague who was there just a few weeks ago told me that the end of the year is a particularly tough time of the year. The last harvest was long ago, and they need to invest their efforts and resources in planting. In the short term, they're facing malnutrition, some of them. They know the danger of living in a life that's dependent on the natural cycles. We're a bit protected from this in our society. But humans are mortal wherever we are. The people of Malawi are just some of the many who know about suffering from firsthand experience. The story of Job continues in their experience of mortality and suffering, and in our own stories as well. as we try to make sense of these things in light of our relationship with God. Despite all the ambiguity of the book, Job's courageous and complaining is an important example for us. And this is one of the reasons why Job is still in the Bible, I guess. Because if you look at it, I think of how many scribes throughout the centuries must have been tempted to just kind of forget to copy the book of Job. It brings up too many uncomfortable issues. Really, it's a miracle that it's there. But in him, we see someone who doesn't pretend that suffering doesn't exist. He doesn't gloss it over. He lives with ambiguity. And we can commend him for his sincerity, speaking both of these feelings he has towards God at once. His openness, his speaking the truth to power even. Job's kind of an amazing guy. There is really great strength in his sincerity, and he becomes someone we can sympathize with. And when we start to think about Job and his journey, we recognize that he is on a path to find stability in his life after tragedy. At the point when we meet him in our story today, he feels judged and found guilty. Three times in our verses today, Job returns to the idea that he is being judged. It's interesting, and it seems that the translators that we have of the verse in the bulletin, you can maybe just look at verse 16 and 17. Surely you will count my steps, but not keep track of my sin. My offenses will be sealed in a bag, you will cover my sin. That's what we have in the bulletin. And in other translations, the idea is that actually God is counting up all of Job's sins, putting them in a bag, and getting them ready to open up to say to Job, see here, that's not Job, God is forgetting about his sin, but that God is collecting his sins. One of the ways that Job is ambiguous is in the translation as well. It's very hard to actually know what the text is saying sometimes. So maybe it's like this: Job is believing that God will forget about his sins, but it seems to me that Job is accusing God again. Why do you pay attention to all the little things I do wrong when I'm just a mere mortal here? In any case, Job feels very judged. And continues to complain about it again and again. But what Job failed to consider at this moment was that perhaps God wasn't judging him. In the book as a whole, God never condemns Job for all his complaining or for sending mixed messages. Later on in the book, we do hear God speak, and there we hear that the Almighty does not accept Job's claim to have a trial. The Almighty says, no, there's no comparison here. We can't have this doesn't work to have a trial. But God never says to Job, you nasty sinner, or you should always feel just good thoughts about me. You should only rejoice. Nothing of the nature. What God does instead is listens for more than 30 chapters in this book. God is just there witnessing to what Job says together in dialogue with his friends. God has been there all the time, witnessing to what Job has to say, listening to him. God is in no hurry to interrupt Job or correct Job. No, God lets Job talk through his feelings, chapter after chapter. And in the end, God has not a single word of condemnation for all of Job's complaints. This is the ambiguous gift of God's silence. when God does respond in the end. God does not crush Job or brush him away or multiply his wounds. He simply questions Job's about the realities of their relationship, helping him to see things in a new light. Having let Job get his pain out through his words, the scene is set for Job to be able to start on a new path of transformation, of coming to a different interpretation of his experience. Dear friends in Christ, sometimes we feel like Job, with lots of mixed feelings and lots of reasons to complain to God. Even if we're feeling less ambiguous in life, if we have our eyes open, we certainly see and can sympathize with those who are in Job's position or something like it. But I find the good news in this passage just by the very fact that it exists. It is a witness to the experience of deep pain that can be expressed completely honestly to God, in ways that are self-contradictory, angry, frustrated, and depressed. Our feelings are ambivalent about God, but God's feelings about us are not ambivalent. God is always relating to us with love. God never calls us close just in order to push us away. Knowing that God is there accepting us as we are in our very human, broken, self-contradictory, mortal way, we can go through life knowing that we're not alone. And maybe that's enough some of the time. Just having a chance to speak what is on our minds and on our hearts. But sometimes in life, we need more than just words. We crave a little action. In the Orthodox Church in Russia, where I was serving, their favorite form of pastoral care and counseling was to give people assignments, work to do. They felt that this would actually help heal the soul by being active, by getting a little bit out of your thoughts and moving. So, for example, we can see where God is moving in the world and try to take part in that. Maybe some of the images from our texts inspire us here. We read about the tree that comes to life again just because of the scent of water. I see God working in that. We could join what God is doing and invest in the tree. Or to turn ever so briefly to our very difficult gospel reading, we see that when we have the eyes to recognize God's presence in the hungry, the naked, and the imprisoned, we can deliberately head in their direction. Not just to look busy, but in giving comfort, find that we receive comfort, seeing God in those who need our service. Jesus tells us, in making contact with vulnerable people, we have a special kind of interaction with the divine. And so, sisters and brothers, we will not get rid of ambiguity in our lives, but we might be able to make a certain peace with it. Knowing that God is merciful and not reject us because of our feelings, our thoughts, or our words directed toward him, we can maintain our sincerity in our relationship with him. And at the same time, move towards saying to the Lord and to one another, come here and stay close. I need you. Amen.